Thank you, good sir.
Quick reminder again, the water is flat.
Oh, guys, what's up? Awesome, awesome intro, Moses.
You're live.
All right, guys, this is Optimus Field, and we are back for another episode of Bitcoin Kindergarten. And tonight, we have a legendary episode for you. But before we get into that, we are at block height 736,986. And the Moscow time is 3,457 sats per dollar, guys. It is under 30K right now, guys. Price in Bitcoin in fiat terms is 28,925. Before we get into our guests, Winikus, did you prepare the ad reads?
I did not. And hopefully I don't mess up this time and start laughing. It's a good thing that we're not together this week. So let's begin. Our first sponsor this evening is Simply Bitcoin. Simply Bitcoin is just the most pure signal you could possibly listen to when it comes to daily Bitcoin shows. Yes, Nico, Phil, Optimus, just shilling all the good Bitcoin news, making sure that you are not getting distracted. Pure signal. What else? Oh, yeah, and you can watch them on Bitcoin TV. I'm not going to mention the other ones today. What else do we got, Optimus?
Well, we have our favorite pet project, but are you going to do the ad read?
Yes, I will. I'm currently not reading anything, but the second ad is for opensourcememes.com. Opensourcememes.com. Fund a Bitcoin memer, not a dev. Devs are just arguing about what features to push, creating tribes, while a Bitcoin memer will actually post whatever you fund. Yes, opensourcememes.com. And yeah, it's pretty incredible that we're the two biggest open source advocates, Matt Odell, Pierre Rochard, who was just here, Justifer, had to go through listening to that. So big shout out to you guys.
Yeah, Winikus, that's definitely a special touch of the show now, is you reading that ad read in front of all of our esteemed guests. So, before we completely derail the show, I don't know if I need to introduce this guy to you guys, but I will because I have so much respect for Matt Odell. Matt Odell, Bitcoiner, awesome Bitcoiner, privacy advocate, open source advocate, host of Citadel Dispatch and Rabbit Hole Recap, co-founder of Bitcoin TV, OpenSats, Bitcoin Dev List, and Final Message, venture partner at 1031, advisors to BottlePay, Bitcoin Mag, Haseki, PlebLab, Hexawallet, and Swan Bitcoin. And honestly, guys, in my personal journey and inspiration to get here, I would have never been here. I would have never been orange pilled if it wasn't for all those hours I put in listening to Marty and Matt in 2017 and 2018. So personally, Matt, it's an honor to have you here. This is a bucket list moment for me. And welcome to the show, bro. It's a pleasure. How are you doing tonight, man?
Appreciate you, boys. It's been a long time coming, and it is a pleasure to be here as well. And go to opensourcememes.com to fund a memer.
Let's go. Well, Matt, this show is How to Stay Humble, but as you can tell, we are meme advocates. And Winikus and I, while we were preparing for the show, we kind of had a deep, profound, transcendent moment when we realized that Matt Odell is low-key a closeted memer. Is this by choice or by accident? Because Matt Odell, the Matt Odell, has created some of the most fire Bitcoin memes around here, like StackSat Stay Humble, like Bullish on Bitcoiners. This guy's a meme machine, but he gives us all left side of the bell curve Bitcoiners the sauce. So he's got to keep it high level for you guys. But Matt, do you hide the fact that you're a memer, or do you cherish the fact that you're a memer? Because you got the skills, dog.
I'm 100% a memer. Memes are real. Every good meme is based in reality. They're more powerful than anything else.
Let's go. That's the kind of meme talk we need to go from the beginning. All right. Well, Juanicus and I don't know if you heard, but I just got back from El Zante, El Salvador. Juanicus is still in El Salvador. And we know you as one of the premier privacy advocates in the Bitcoin space. And we heard a little rumor down there, and we want to know if this is true. And the rumor is that your OPSEC is still incredibly good and that your real name is, in fact, Mateo Ortega. Is this fake news or fact? Is your OPSEC this good and you've just been LARPing as Matt Odell this whole time?
I can neither confirm nor deny that.
Whew. Yeah, that's a privacy advocate I'd be after. All right. Okay. Juanicus,
How was El Salvador? Did you enjoy El Salvador?
Oh, dude, I loved it. Honestly, like, in complete seriousness, it's such an awesome village. Like, it's a tiny town. It's super inspiring to see all these people that have adopted Bitcoin. Like, it's money. Like, it's meant to be used. They're using Lightning as payments. And it's just beautiful to see people in Latin America using Bitcoin as it's intended and being optimistic and happy and just... Dude, it's a great vibe. If you guys haven't been down there, you definitely have to get down there, get in the water, walk on the black sand beaches. Juanicus is still down there. He's got no electricity right now.
Don't come yet, because I'm in no AC right now, sweating like crazy, a lot of humidity in a dark room operating on my hotspot. So there's pros and cons to it. But yeah, it's really cool to spend sats down here.
That's fucking awesome. I haven't been down there yet. I need to make it down there.
Yeah, you definitely do. I think everyone should definitely make a trip. Juanicus was calling it the Bitcoin Mecca, and it definitely feels like that. It's a little paradise, and putting El Salvador on the map, it's definitely something you guys should do. Give back, scam yourself of your sats, and participate in the circular economy, boys and girls. All right, Juanicus, how about you ask your conference question? That's a good question, since we're going to troll them out before we get into the signal.
I mean, I have a lot of trolley questions here, so it's up to you, Matt, how much you want of them. But we know you're famous for the 200K by conference day, so we're wondering which conference you were actually talking about.
Well, I mean, I cannot first of all, I'm down for anything and everything. So we can shoot the shit. I'm very excited about it. A lot of people have tried to give me the ability to do a cop-out that it could be any conference day I was talking about. But there was a specific tweet that I sent out that was all caps. That was like 100K in 50 days, 200K by 1st of May. And that was 1st of May last year. So... yeah, I got that one pretty wrong. Got a little carried away there for a little bit. They didn't necessarily stay humble on Twitter.
Well, all right. Well, I'm glad we got into tonight's topic. Matt, can we just like maybe give the plebs out there a little game plan on your days when you don't feel humble? What is your routine to stay humble? Do you just go on Twitter and let people shit on you? Do you watch the charts? How does Matt Odell stay so humble? Well, obviously besides 200K by conference day.
You know, the reason I say stay humble so often is not only for everybody else, it's also for me. It's a constant reminder, right? Like, you just have, I just constantly remind myself, because I'm just not naturally humble. And at the end of the day, I mean, if you're not humble, Bitcoin will fucking humble you. There's a lot of people that were not humble 4 weeks ago, 5 weeks ago, and they're feeling pretty humble right now. And it wasn't really a decision of their own. Bitcoin will do that to you. It will fucking humble you no matter what. And at the end of the day, what most people don't realize is, because we have survivorship bias, is the only people you see around in the public Bitcoin sphere that have been around for a while are the survivors. Most people got absolutely fucking wrecked and left, and the survivors stand on. But when new people come into the space, they look around and they're like, wow, this is so easy. All these people, you know, have made it this far. But what you don't see is you don't see the 95% of people that got absolutely wrecked and left.
Now listen, that's called motherfucking bar.
Matt, that's pretty much why we stick around and do this show and try to get as many people to find the way, because it's happened to us. You know, we got wrecked, and I found you back then, bro. Like, I found Matt and Marty and Stefan Levera, and, you know, I somehow put in the work, and here we are. And we're just, you know, each one teaching one, and we'll pass that lesson along for the next ones, and hopefully we can make sure that people's transition is easier. But we can't guarantee anything. Weinikus, I see you have a favorite question you want to ask right now.
I don't know which one you're talking about. I don't want to switch around the topics too much. But since we're talking about being humbled, we do have a question. Satyoshi helped with this one. And he said he wants to know more about you. What's your favorite whiskey during the bear market, and which one's your favorite during the bull market? Whiskey or scotch?
I mean, I like to jump around a lot. My bottom bitch is Macallan. It's always on the bar, and it's always a safe pick. But I move around a lot in terms of what whiskeys I drink. I like going, what I usually do is I go to the liquor store, and then I buy a bottle of Macallan. And then I buy something that has a cool label that's like in the $50 range or the $40 range. It's not really a science. So I have a bunch of bourbons. The bar's not in front of me right now. I actually should pour a bourbon right now. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to pour a bourbon. Also, mezcal. I've been big into mezcal lately. Mezcal is super underrated. Just sipping on some mezcal. And there's another type that's called Sotol. That is, it's basically Texas mezcal. And I found this Sotol brand that I don't know what it's called. It comes in this like blue bottle that is fucking fire. But now I'm going to go walk to the bar and let me pour a drink.
What do we know? Mateo Ortega loves mezcal.
Yeah, your OPSEC's leaking through there, bro. Yes, this is not good. This is not good.
Matt, what about scotch?
So right now, scotch-wise, on my bar, I have Macallan 12. I have Oban 14. Got a couple gins. I got Traverse City whiskey, straight bourbon whiskey. I have Diplomatico rum, Casamigos tequila, Del Maguey mezcal, Mount Gay rum.
Does the spirit sit concave, or do they sit flat?
Dude, they're just sitting on my fucking bar. Like, I don't know. I'm not a scientist.
That's flat.
Well, Matt O'Dell with the soft flex on the very gentlemanly bar over there, guys. We'll have to rewind that and get a list of all that. But Matt, since you're drinking the drink now, I have a very deep and profound question to ask you. Before we actually get into the deep and profound questions, would you smash Odell? This comes from our boy Tucson.
Absolutely not.
Let's go. Let's go. You guys heard it here first. I don't know what you're seeing, Matt, but I would definitely do some things to smash Odell. Just saying.
Can we talk privacy, Optimus?
Yes, sir. That's where we were going, bro. Why don't you just jump in?
Well, I have a few questions, but I guess we'll start up with a layup. How dangerous is the calculator app? Like, what kind of data are they collecting, and what alternatives do you have?
First of all, I found another bottle on my bar that I think someone bought this for me. Royal Salute Blended Scotch Whiskey, 21 years old. So I'm going to open that. Not really a humble bottle, but I didn't buy it, so it's kind of humble. Maybe it'll turn the bear market around. The calculator app is taking all your data. You're just completely cucked to the calculator app. Are we talking about the built-in calculator app?
Yeah.
On iPhone or Android?
I guess both. We probably have both listeners.
The calculator app is completely fine. I'm going to answer your question seriously. The rest of the phone is spying on you. Not the calculator. Not the built-in
calculator apps. But another privacy question before we get into the more legitimate ones is, I was thinking the other day, I was like, you know what the best privacy stack is? Just not having a cell phone and being on your own island. What do you think of that?
I mean, you joke, but like really, you shouldn't have a phone. Like Janine doesn't have a phone. She's a proper privacy advocate. I love technology too much to go phoneless. So I just try and compensate as much as possible by locking down the phone and using, you know, a de-Googled Android phone. But really, ideally, you should just not carry a cell phone. And it's probably better for you health-wise, too. I mean, we get really, all of us get really sucked into our phones. And I think I'm better than most people, but it's still definitely, you know, it's an addiction. If you don't have your phone with you, you kind of feel lost. But yeah, islands are great for privacy as well. That's a good point. I never really thought about that.
Yeah, we have to add private islands to the privacy stack. But I was actually thinking the other day, we should bring back beepers, like pagers. You know, whenever somebody actually really wants to get in touch with you, they just vibrate your little device on your hip. And that's really like where
and
things
you hit
should
a pay
be
phone?
Going. Yeah, payphone or I don't know. I don't know what the next step is.
Serious question, though. Are flip phones legit, like, for privacy aspects?
So, I mean, there's two main ways our phones spy on us. You have the cell phone triangulation data. So it's when you connect to a cell tower, like, there's three cell towers that are near you, and they use math to determine a rough location of where you're based on your distance of those three towers. So obviously a flip phone doesn't protect you from that. That type of tracking requires a warrant in America. So it's much harder to get on people, and usually they just don't even have to do that. And that's because all of our apps that we have on our smartphones are collecting data on our location in real time, because the phone, you can give location permissions to the apps, right? So like you joked around about the calculator app, but a big one is the weather app, because most people want location enabled for the weather stuff. And what happens with that data is sold to marketers, and it goes through like a bunch of different companies. So what we see right now is not only do the companies track you based on that, but governments will then go and buy that data from the marketing companies. And they don't have to do a warrant. So like right now, like it came out a couple of weeks ago that the CDC basically just bought location data on millions of Americans, and they didn't need a warrant for it. They never had to go into a courtroom. They actually used our taxpayer money and then spent it on our data to spy on us. So a flip phone helps there. If you use like a prepaid SIM on the flip phone, that's not tied to your identity, right, that you pay for with cash or Bitcoin, it can help there. But even then, you need to rotate it, because location data is like a fucking beast, because location data, they always say like, oh, it's anonymized location data, but that's fucking bullshit, because if they see where you live, work, which bar you go to, you know, all the different places you go, like it's pretty easy to figure out who the fucking person is, as long as you just have that location data. So even if it's a prepaid SIM, you really need to basically constantly rotate and get new ones, which just brings us back to best case scenarios. You don't have a phone. And then all this sounds crazy, I know, but ultimately you're not attempting to be perfect. Like I don't expect anyone to be perfect. I'm not perfect. by any means. But the idea is to make it more difficult to track you. And at scale, what that means, it means it's more difficult to track everybody, right? Like, they're doing these huge dragnet surveillance tactics, and they're just scooping up tons and tons of data on all of us. And it's super easy. They don't need warrants. They just press a couple buttons and they have all that data. If you can make it a tiny bit more difficult for them, then all of a sudden we're all in a way better situation.
Hey, Matt, what's the end game in terms of collecting all this data, selling it, making money? But if nobody interrupts my life in meat space, stops me from moving, restricts, you know, my movement across a border, or, you know, takes my stuff because they happen to know where I am, how does it affect me otherwise? If you can even quantify that, if you don't mind.
I mean, I think the fear is like all this data is collected, stored indefinitely and shared around, just stored insecurely. Other people can get access to it. So even if it doesn't fuck you today, it can fuck you in the future. And like, we kind of saw like a peek behind the curtains during the COVID shit, right? Which is, I mean, I'm a former New Yorker. I met Server Jim in New York. There was a moment there where it was illegal in New York City to meet up with 10 people in an apartment. If you met up with 10 people in an apartment, you were breaking the law. And all that location data is still out there, right? And people text horrible things that they should not be putting on a cell phone between people. All of that is just stored in data centers. They're just storing all of it. And at some point, if you become too much of a thorn in the side of someone, you will be made an example of. You will be made an example of for probably something that is not the reason you're the thorn in the side of them. So like and we see that happen a lot where, I mean, this is not like a perfect example, but, you know, someone was upset with Bezos. So they made sure to expose that he was cheating on his wife. Right. And they ran him through the fucking mud, but they weren't angry at him for cheating on his wife. They just used that piece of information to go after him retroactively.
Well, that definitely sucks. What about disconnecting from your old trail, you know, move, change phones, even change countries? Do you see any effectiveness in something like that? Is there a way to disengage from, you know, who you are electronically, your electronic footprint on the internet, and start a new one, you think?
I mean, yeah, you can definitely improve your current situation. But all that data is out there still. The previous data is all out there. So the most important thing is, you know I scare the shit out of people a lot. I have like people walk up to me. I was in Miami. Like, I had multiple people walk up to me. It's like, Matt, you just scare the shit out of me every week. And then, you know, that's a little bit of a tactic, like get people to fucking care. Like, people care when they get scared. But the most important thing is not to, you know, the meme that you always hear in the privacy world is, I have nothing to hide, you know, why should I care? I have nothing to hide. But that's not really what I hear. What I hear most of the time is, I'm already fucked, so there's nothing I can do about it. And that's completely wrong. There are a lot of little things you can do that improve your situation going forward. And the sooner you start looking into them and start executing on them, the better you're off. So, you know, people shouldn't get overwhelmed. They should take little steps to improve their situation. You know, little things like fucking don't have an Alexa in your house, you know, a wiretap that's always on. You know, maybe don't use Facebook and Instagram and Snapchat and TikTok or Twitter, but Twitter is the only social media I use. I'm addicted to it, but limit your social media, right? Limit your Google usage. Don't have location enabled on your iPhone. You know, go pull down the fucking thing, click the location button and turn it off. And when you absolutely need to use location, then go and turn it on manually. You know, these little things improve your situation tremendously, and they're relatively accessible. Don't send your DNA to a company that's selling it to a bunch of different fucking people. You're just doxing all future generations. You know, you're doxing your grandkids that aren't even fucking born yet. just all these little things, they add up and they're accessible to a lot of people. And it just comes down to, do you care and do you want to improve your situation?
Yeah, listen, that's called motherfucking butt.
Odell, dropping the heat on us. Well, you perfectly segue into what I was going to ask you next. So I'll ask you this this question. You don't have to actually answer this seriously if it gets you frustrated, but do you ever get frustrated while orange pilling people and privacy pilling people? Because like you just said, it's hard to get people to care. And I know personally, as a millennial and people younger than me, they put everything on the internet and most people just like, they're just apathetic. So knowing that that's the case, do you ever get frustrated or you're just like, this is part of the process and, you know, I'm here to teach and educate?
You know, I'm always fucking frustrated. It's just constantly, it's just constant frustration. But also it's motivation to carry forward, right? And continue. I mean, we've done Rabbit Hole Recap for over 3 years every week. Like, Marty had a kid. We evacuated New York. I got married. Like, Rabbit Hole Recap still happened that week. And the motivation is, you know, if this, at the end of the day, you know, individuals empowering themselves is stronger than anything else. And it's a slow and steady process. Like, it's not going to happen overnight. And I just feel obligated to do my small part in that process. And so the frustration kind of is one of the main sources of motivation for me to stay public all the time, not delete my Twitter, still do the podcast, still do everything else I do in the space, is mostly based on that frustration that I realize that there's so much still that needs to be done. But I will admit that some days, I mean, if you listen to Rabbit Hole Recap, you can see it too. There's some days where I just look like I'm just dead inside. those are the really humble days. And then I just carry on. You just continue forward. One step in front of the next.
Beautiful. Yeah, guys, honestly, you guys don't understand how hard it is to give you guys content every week, let alone like every day or every other day, like Matt's doing it over here. So, dude, kudos to you. I know the feeling, and it's the same thing. You just come out because you know you're responsible to the people that want you to show up. So, beautiful. We got some questions in YouTube. Let me bring Walton up. He's been bugging the whole time. He's got a special announcement. Let's see what this is. And we got a few questions in the YouTube chat. Walton, your time, bro.
Hello, good evening. I have an announcement. The Bitcoin Council of Autism have temporarily suspended Phil Gibson. He is no longer a member.
Walter, don't be a fucking bitch, you British cunt.
And he needs to learn a lesson. Odell, it was nice to meet you in Miami. Apologies for interrupting the show. But whilst whilst privacy is important, some things also must be made public. I appreciate the time. Back to you, sir.
Cheers.
Let's go.
All right. All right, we got another question in here. This one comes from our boy, Nick Can't Mime. And he goes, will you ask Matt Odell a question? Where's the question? Sorry. And he goes, can you ask Matt what his favorite thing about living in Austin, Texas is?
The beauty of Austin is it's the crypto capital of the world.
That's gross.
Oh, that's a good one. Nick, hey, I see you, bro. I see you. All right.
I'm going to cashier myself now. Thanks, man.
Phil Gibson wreck, double. All right, guys. Legit question. This is serious. Coming from our boy, Labrahoddle. Matt, what alternative do you think we have after DuckDuckGo fucked up?
Oh, I don't know. I don't have a solution to that yet. I just continue to use DuckDuckGo, but just disappointed in them. I don't know. I've been exhausted lately. There's got to be an alternative. I haven't found it yet. If someone in the audience has a good alternative, let me know, please. That'd be great.
Let's go.
Which is just tweeting something out, and you'll have a lot of plebs in there. Like, just ask what your favorite deodorant is.
That's the answer.
What is the answer? Bitcoin Twitter?
Bitcoin Twitter.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, like, I love the group chats, and I like Bitcoin Twitter. I mean, look, to be honest, like, the DuckDuckGo thing is really disappointing, but it's not on the privacy side. It's their algorithm is censoring shit. And to be honest, like, the trade-off of DuckDuckGo is their search results sucked already. So, like, it doesn't really impact the experience that much.
Yeah, listen! That's cool
for the- Oh, my God. I'm dead. Let's go. All right, let's see. We got someone popping up. Oh, that's a bot. My bad. All right. We got some questions over here.
That bot's name was Walter.
Yeah, exactly. Walton. We got a few bots in here. Actually, Winikus, ask your Thanos question. I think it's a good time.
All right, we got a couple shitcoin-related questions. So the first one is, suppose you were Thanos, which shitcoiner do you wish could disappear with the snap of a finger? Or shitcoiners?
Wait, can Thanos just disappear people? Or how does that work?
Yeah, he snaps his finger and half the people disappear. Like
Infinity Stones, but you just roll with it. This is a Winikus left.
What noise does it make? What's the opposite of burr?
I would say Richard Hart.
Go on.
I mean, what do I have to go on about? Like, if Thanos could disappear someone, I choose Richard Hart.
All right.
Yeah. I got another shitcoin question. Which buzzwords make your blood boil?
If I don't know, it's either him or Chris Ripple. It's one or the other.
Yeah, that was Pierre's choice, right? Or it was one of the Ripple guys.
Yeah, it was the same dude. Yeah, that guy's a turd. That guy sucks. But Winikus, ask Odell the buzzword question again, because I would like to comment on this one as well.
Yeah, I mean, there's all these like crypto buzzwords that make people go crazy, whether it's even the word crypto itself, Web3. So like, which ones do you see and just get you really angry?
You know, I'm old fashioned. Crypto is still like crypto and blockchain are still my, if I see someone say crypto, like I just know right away that they've missed the point. It's just like it's the easiest red flag on that.
Yeah, crypto definitely sounds like fingernails on chalkboard. The one that has been killing me lately, guys, is decentralize. Everyone says decentralize this, and it's not what they think it is. Hence why Winikus is rebranding as decentralized homelessness soon, because we're going to rebrand that and take it and mean something of value, because everything is decentralized and it's driving me nuts, guys. Jesus. Wine, your word, or keep it moving?
I will agree that they just slapped decentralized on everything, which doesn't actually make something decentralized. Which is definitely frustrating, but I still think crypto is worse. And maybe DeFi is pretty bad, but because it has decentralized in it as well. But anyway, Beef Friendly at CyberHornet420 on Twitter said that he likes Brave Search. So take that as you will. I don't know if they use another search engine in the background or not, I'm like scrolling through the FAQ, but.
Don't they have a shitcoin on it as well?
They're saying they don't. Yeah, that's why I really don't like Brave. They can go fuck themselves. But you can technically use the browser or the search without their shitcoin.
Okay. All right, we got a question in our chat by Mr. Robot59. He goes, Matt, Lightning email address or Lightning invoice for future ease of use?
What, like, what do we name them?
I think he's saying, which one do you think is going to be easier to use? Like, I don't know, which one do you think is better, I guess? That's the question.
Well, so we already have something called Lightning Addresses, which look like an email address. I mean, we shouldn't call them
Lightning. I think that's what he's talking about.
We shouldn't call them Lightning email addresses because that's just fucking confusing. They're not emails.
Yeah.
I think invoice kind of works. I don't know. The problem, I like the term Lightning address. The current implementation of Lightning addresses, I don't love because most people are just using them with custodial services. Like, technically, you can use Lightning address with your own node, but most aren't. So that's not ideal. And I kind of wish they hadn't taken the term. Now we can't use the term Lightning address for whatever comes next. But I think ultimately, like, when people interact with Bitcoin in 5 years, you're going to have like a contact list. It's going to be like Venmo, and you'll just, you know, you'll choose, like, I want to send 100 sats to Winekiss, and I just choose Winekiss and I just fucking send it. And I don't see invoices. I don't see any kind of tech stuff. Like, all the background stuff gets hidden away. But we're pretty far from that still. I said 5 years. Maybe it's longer than that.
Beautiful. Well, how about we segue a bit. Again, back to the memes. One of my favorite memes that you created was the Uncle Jim idea of Bitcoiners being the Uncle Jim to their new coiner family and friends. And so maybe there's an aspiring Uncle Jim out in the audience right now. What do you think, or actually, what is your favorite starter node for someone out there? Like, is there one that you like the best, or are you just whatever features work for you? Just get a node up and running and be an Uncle Jim for your friends and family.
I'm my favorite is a Raspberry Blitz. If you want a pre-built node, Nautils are really solid. I've been rocking Nautils for a while now. They're very reliable. Ketaminer and Askew are great. You know, I'm a little bit torn on Umbral. Part of me, it's obviously a very easy access point for people, but I don't really think you really learn much from it. So the idea that, like, you start with Umbral and then as you get better with Umbral, you move to like a Raspberry Blitz or something more sophisticated is probably more of a meme than a reality thing. But Umbral is fine. I mean, you just There's with all these nodes, there's a bit of a trust thing you're doing, and with Umbral it's more. And that's, you know, if you're a user and you're just blindly clicking the update button and just doing whatever, you know, the Umbral lords tell you to do, you know, you're trusting them. But is everything has trade-offs, and ultimately with the Uncle Jim model, the idea is, and I'm sorry, Server Jim, it wasn't named after you. I just picked a random male name on a rabbit hole recap and it stuck, is this idea that you run the node, you run all the services, and then you have, you know, your close family and friends all connect back to your node. And I think of it more as like, I mean, hopefully it's more of a adoption step, right? Which is like an intermediary period where, you know, we don't have super user friendly self-sovereign ways to use these things. So people rely on their Uncle Jim to run all the backends for them. But the ideal situation is that everything just like runs on a mobile app on your phone and you have your node and everything there. That would be the absolutely ideal situation. We are nowhere near close to that right now. So instead of your friends using or your family using a custodial Blue Wallet Lightning or a custodial wallet of Satoshi, you can easily set up your node and hook them up, link them to yours. And it's I really appreciate the projects that have made it easier to do that, right? So I don't love that Blue Wallet has I don't love that Blue Wallet defaults to Custodial Lightning, but they make it relatively easy to Uncle Jim it. And so does Samurai. Like, Samurai makes it extremely easy. You literally just scan a QR code, and then they're Uncle Jim'd. Like, you can just show your friend a QR code, and they can just scan it with Samurai Wallet, and all of a sudden they're using your node. So I want to see more of that. I think we have made a lot of progress in the space on the Uncle Jim side, which is good to see, like, over the last year or so. Also, like, another thing is, I would say, you know, when we're talking nodes, it's really a computer in your home that's running 24/7. This idea that you're going to run everything on this one fucking computer is a horrible idea. Like, if you want to be a proper Uncle Jim, like, you need to run multiple nodes that have different things running on them. And ideally, you know, your Bitcoin stuff is separated from everything else. So, like, don't install Umbral and just fucking install every single app in the Umbral App Store. Like, that's just a recipe for disaster.
Matt, in your opinion, do you think that it's realistic to believe that everyone in the world will self-custody? Like, I know we say that's the ideal, but do you think everyone will eventually be self-custodying their own Bitcoin?
There is no shot in hell that happens. I would call it a win if in 10 years we have 20% of people self-custody.
Yeah, I'd see the same. I mean, I think it might be a little higher than 20% eventually, but yeah, I don't think I'd see everyone self-custody. I think we'll always have an Uncle Jim. But I have a funny question, actually. Do you ever know what happened to the TFTC node? Like, did you ever find out who took it or what happened to it? Is it still running? I haven't updated on it in a while. I know we know it disappeared and it was somewhere running and he was being a good steward of the node, but what's the update on that thing?
Dude, that was the funniest fucking thing ever because, so like in the early days of Lightning, no one was running over Tor. So I had this ClearNet TFTC node and I was pretty vocal about it. Ridiculous that everyone was doxing their IP address on their nodes. But of course, in typical Odell fashion, I still did it anyway, because I wanted to see what the fuck was going on. So when I switched it to Tor, I was like, oh, this will be hilarious. Like, the freaks will get a fucking kick out of it if I pretend like the node got stolen and then it was switched behind Tor. And the tweet was like, our node got stolen, but the person who stole it messaged us and he switched behind Tor, but he's going to keep your channels open and keep fees low on the node or whatever. It was like the most obvious fucking satire. And there was maybe like 30 to 40 shitcoiners and bcashers and stuff that were like quote tweeting me. They're like, Lightning is never going to work. Like, people just get their fucking funds stolen, and they were using that as proof, and I just let them run with it. It was fun times.
Amazing. See, this is what closet memeing is. You don't even know when he's memeing or not, guys. This is the real meta meme level you're trying to get on. Oof, Weinekes, you need to take some notes, bro. Your game's lacking, dog. I thought you were a meme expert.
Dude, so you know how there's a bell curve and we're on the left side? I'm like on the left side of that left side of the bell curve. So I don't even understand like what these memes are about. We're in a different stratosphere here.
Amazing. Oh my God. Well, Matt, who is when you talk into the noobs out there, is there a particular Citadel Dispatch that you shoot out? Or, I mean, you have so much good sauce on there. Like, is there a favorite that you shill the most? Or are you just like, yo, this one's for this, this one's for that? I have fucking hours out there. Go listen to it, guys.
Yeah, so, I mean, my goal with Dispatch was to basically create content that was more timeless, that could last longer. So you can, at any point, if you wanted to go back to specific topics or whatnot, there's like a 2-hour deep dive that I might've gotten too trashed in on that specific topic. But I did one episode with Bitcoin Q&A, which was Citadel Dispatch 43. And you can just, Citadel Dispatch is in all podcast apps. You just search Citadel Dispatch. But episode 43 was just me and him going from start to finish, It was like a little over two hours and 10 minutes for a beginner, but like in a responsible way. So we talked about privacy trade-offs. We talked about security trade-offs. We talked about self-custody, but we did it in an order that we think would like be a good flow for someone that's coming into the space. I think it'd be really helpful for people that even have been here for a year or 2 years. I mean, I met people at in Miami at the Bitcoin conference that paid $21,000 for a ticket and they've never self-custodied. So like they should listen to this episode as well, right? And I that's the one I point to the most. I think it's probably one of my most proudest 2 hours of Bitcoin conversation. It turned out we were both really nervous about it because I was like, we're doing it live, no edits, start to finish, let's fucking go.
Yeah, that's a great show. And I know what you mean when you have a topic and you're like, okay, we're going to explain this really well, hopefully. And then you just go, you're like, well, I hope that went well. And then it just goes fire. So we got a question for Mr. Robot59 in regards to Bitcoin TV. He goes, what's the sauce with the Bitcoin TV Lightning TFTC teaser?
Do we know what he means by that?
I have no clue. I thought you might.
So BitcoinTV.com is host Bitcoin only content. We host it on, it's me, Wiz, and BitKite. We host it on our own servers. We don't use AWS in two continents. It is not decentralized. We're not shitcoiners. We're not going to pretend it's decentralized. But it's not, you know, controlled by big tech, right? So it's not controlled by Google, YouTube. It's not controlled by Amazon. We're not on Microsoft servers. Like, we're running our own servers that on hardware we control. So first and foremost, it's just a citadel for Bitcoin content, where people know that they won't get taken down from. And you know, well, we don't run any trackers or do any logs or anything like that either. Some of that you can verify yourself, some of that you're trusting us, but like you can guarantee that YouTube and Twitch and Twitter and everyone else is fucking tracking the fuck out of you. At least I know that we're not tracking you for that. Now, the second step is to do proper Lightning integration. And this is something that is very close to my heart because I believe that we're moving from a model, as much as I love Winekiss's ad reads, where instead of having advertisers pay for content, where basically the incentives are set up that you want to please your advertisers. And this is why we see people like Peter McCormick, you know, defending BlockFi in certain situations and whatnot, is you have the audience directly fund you. You have the audience directly fund you with Lightning. And so Citadel Dispatch has been my test case on that. So I've never had ads or sponsored on Citadel Dispatch. I could sell those ad spots for a shit ton of fucking money. But instead, I'm doing podcasting 2.0 where people stream sats to support the show at whatever value they think the show is worth. You pick how many sats and you just send it. Podcasting 2.0 uses an open Lightning integration, which is they insert your public key of your node, the ID of your node, into an RSS feed. Bitcoin TV already has an RSS feed. So what we want to do is add the public key to those RSS feeds so apps can pick it up and you can watch the video and do the same thing where you optionally stream sats to support content that you appreciate. And then as a result, you know, the content creator who's ever making that content is directly incentivized to provide the best content possible for the audience rather than incentivized to work for his sponsors and try and make his sponsors happy. I mean, we dropped Compass as a sponsor. I was really fucking upset that they were a sponsor in the first place. And, you know, the Compass guys were on Twitter like, no one should ever sponsor Rabbit Hole Recap. Well, go fuck yourself. Like, I have fuck you money. Like, why? Like, I'm not, you think you could just buy my voice? But that's what they think, because for most people, that's what they do. They throw some money at you and they either do praise or they just shut the fuck up when anything bad happens and just don't even fucking talk about it. So I think the future here is direct audience monetization. It's still very early, you know, Citadel Dispatch, I've done over 200 hours. The amount of sats I brought in from Dispatch is less than like two episodes of Rabbit Hole Recap, one episode of Rabbit Hole Recap. Like, it's fucking major difference, even though it's the same, almost the same amount of listeners. But I think as more people get used to the format, as more people, as there's more apps available to make it easier for people, I think people want to support content they enjoy. I just think, you know, you have to reduce the friction. You have to make it as easy as possible, so they're not greeted with a difficult process in order to do that. And fortunately, we have, you know, right now we have Fountain Podcast and Breeze Wallet that make it relatively easy to do the podcasting 2.0 thing. But there's still some pain points there, and they're working them out. And I think in the next few years, it'll become much easier and hopefully more successful as a result.
Yeah, agreed. We love the value for value stuff over here. We just added the ZBD streamer, and it's been a real game changer to have our friends trolling us live on the show. So it brings us back to the old days on Discord, and I'm excited to see what it does for streamers, especially for Bitcoiners out there. But I have a question about Bitcoin TV. I don't know if this is you sharing too much sauce, but rumor is that you guys will get streaming straight into Bitcoin TV. Is this true? Because I'd love to just stream straight into Bitcoin TV and route around YouTube.
Yeah, so if you already have a channel on Bitcoin TV, we already have streaming built in. And it uses that standard RTMP standard or whatever. So okay. All your streaming software just works with it. You just plug it right in. Every single dispatch is broadcast on.
I guess Bitcoin I'm really TV as well. I must be real left side bell curve because I couldn't figure it out. I guess I'm going back to the drawing board.
I mean, I can walk you through it, but if you click the publish button and then press go live, it gives you all the stuff you need to put in your streaming software. The one thing I would say is, oh, and like also like the open source stage at the Miami conference, like because of budget cuts, there was no live stream. Wiz went out and bought like a Canon like DSLR, nice fucking camera. And he used my podcast microphone and we streamed it to Bitcoin TV live, just like a pirate stream in the back corner of the. So that was like a big test case because fucking Dorsey tweeted it out. So we had the most hits ever in a single moment on a single stream, and it didn't die. It stayed up. So we were pretty proud of that. The one negative I would say is right now, you know, you just at the end of the day, you got to go where the audience is. And most people are on Twitch and YouTube. They like press the subscribe button. They get the little notification on their phone when you go live. So it's going to be a, you know, it's an uphill thing. I put Bitcoin TV. So when I stream Dispatch, I stream to Twitch and Bitcoin TV and Twitter. Most people are on Twitch and Twitter. But there's, you know, there's like a group of ride or dies, like 50 of them that choose to use a Bitcoin TV stream. And that's how it's going to start, right? It'll start small by the hardcores, and then over time, hopefully becomes more standard to not use these big tech platforms for streaming content.
Beautiful. Well, guys, I'll make sure we're streaming to Bitcoin TV because we get a lot of hate on YouTube, but it's a necessary evil. Anyways, we got a great question in here by our boy Any Rug. I know that's not how I say your name, but that's how I say your name. And he goes, Odell, how did you get orange pilled?
So I had so the backdrop was 2008 financial crisis. As a young kid, I was like, holy shit, no one knows anything. All the experts, there's no experts. They're all fucking full of shit. So that kind of radicalized me, at least in a financial sense. First person to tell me about Bitcoin was 2012. It was a, maybe like early 2012. So it was like, Bitcoin was like a dollar or some shit. It was one of my high school friends who was addicted to opiates. And he was buying opiates on Silk Road at his fraternity. And I was like, well, this guy's just a fucking drug addict. Like, there's no way that this is a real thing. So I just completely ignored him. And then like a year later, I had a college friend who was a straight edge Muslim guy. Doesn't drink, doesn't smoke, nerd. And he was like, dude, this Bitcoin thing is so cool. So I was like, oh my God, we got this. I got this drug user and I got this nerd who are both telling me that Bitcoin is this digital cash money. There must be something there. And then at the same time, the Snowden leaks happened. And that was like, it was like the similar thing as the 2008 stuff, but instead of like, oh, the financial system's fucked, it was like every single tech company is just fucking spying on us. And you can't trust any tech company and you need open source software. And then I just went down the rabbit hole, you know, kind of myself on the internet. I didn't have any like friends. Like both of them told me it in passing, but like they were never like my Bitcoin people. Like I was on Reddit and Bitcoin Talk and IRC, just going through the paces like everyone else does. And I mean, back then we didn't really have that much content. I mean, we had like Andreas. It was mostly just posting things in IRC and Bitcoin Talk and Reddit, and then just getting grilled and destroyed by other people telling me I was a fucking idiot. And then I slowly and steadily started to learn. And then 2013, we went from 1,200 all the way down to 150. And at the top, I was, so 2013, I was stacking without telling my family. And like, I was pretty fucking poor. So like, I didn't just get that much of a stack, but the price ran up, right? And I was not humble at $1,200. I told a bunch of people at $1,200, you got to buy Bitcoin. You know, I'm a fucking genius. Like everything's fucking awesome. And then we went down 90%. So in 2015, I was like in the red fucking like 90% or 80%. And that's where you build the resolve, right? That's when you start to be like, okay, I need to know everything about this thing because I just lost all my fucking money. The bear markets are where you really, I think people who get in and just, it goes up for 3 years are in way worse situation than people that just come in and just get wrecked right away. Like you want to get wrecked. And then you want to learn in a bear market and then get some conviction to just stay humble and stack sats. So like, I didn't just come up with this brilliant idea of humbly stacking over time and accumulating. I got fucking wrecked. And I was like, okay, Matt, you can't trade. You can't time shit. You know, just accumulate this fucking money week over week and hopefully it works out.
Honestly, Matt, it's I know I've heard that story before somewhere on Tales from the Crypt or Citadel Dispatch or something. But to hear it again now on Bitcoin Kindergarten, it's just like a full circle moment. I literally did the same exact thing. Instantly got wrecked with shit coins, but then I found you and Marty and Stefan Lavera and Safe Dean, and here we are. So hopefully we can do the same favor for other people that are coming into the space, because I've been saying it for a while now, and I think most of us that have been around can see it too, that the Bitcoin education this time around is so much better than what it was, and it's been continually improving. And there's so many tentacles out there to capture all the noobs coming into the space. So it's just awesome to be a Bitcoin content creator. It's awesome to consider you a peer. And it's awesome to just hear your story and be like, man, I remember doing that same cycle, and here we are. So to the noobs out there, this is Bitcoin Kindergarten. Just trust the process. Like these memes hit because there's truth behind them. And I know a lot of my friends have done the same story as Matt. So, man, it's full circle. Kind of blown away right now.
It's a meme world. We're just living in it.
100%. 100%.
The other thing I would add to the new people is everyone fucking thinks they're late. You know, people got in 2011. They thought they were late. When I discovered it in 2013, I was like, fuck, man. If I had listened to my other friend, I would have gotten at a dollar or whatever. I'm so fucking late. Like, you always think you're late, no matter what. And so far, none of us have been late. So, you know, don't discourage yourself on that. And don't think like you have to go, you know, find the shiniest new shitcoin and wipe off the shit off of it to try and get back into the game.
Bunch of wisdom.
That's called motherfucking
Let's go. I have more questions, but I have two that I think we can wrap this up, and I'll see if anyone wants to ask you some more. But Matt, what's an underlooked aspect of Bitcoin that you think people should be looking into right now? Like, what's the hot shit you're into?
There's this thing called Federated Chaumian Mints that Eric Sirion and Obi are working on. And, you know, so I did, like, I put together the open source stage at the Bitcoin conference in Miami, and I intentionally ended it with a double header of the Fedimint. So this Federated Mint idea, which is first we had Obi do a presentation, and then afterwards there was a panel conversation on it. And that was intentional because it's one of the most exciting developments in Bitcoin for a long time. And just the overarching view, well, first of all that open source stage content is on Bitcoin TV. It's on YouTube. I put it on the Sill Dispatch feed. So if you haven't listened to it, go listen to it. I even put like timestamps on the Dispatch feed so you can pick which one in the show notes. And if you click it, if you have a good podcast app, like Antennapod does this. I think a bunch of the podcast apps do that. By the way, Antennapod's my favorite podcast app, open source. You can go straight to the individual talk through the show notes. So you don't have to go through the 5 hours per day of content. But Fedimints, what are Fedimints? Fedimints is this idea that we could have a mobile Lightning wallet that's as easy to use as Wallet of Satoshi. But when you use Wallet of Satoshi, it's fully custodial. So you're trusting Wallet of Satoshi to take your money. They could take your money at any time. And you're also trusting them with your privacy. Like Wallet of Satoshi sees every transaction you make. But with Fedimints, what happens is the custodian, first of all, cannot see any of your transactions. So you have perfect privacy against the custodian. And then the second thing is, the custodian, instead of being one custodian, it's almost like a multi-sig. So you have maybe 15 custodians and like 12 of them need to come together to steal your money. So you end up with a situation where you have a very easy to use app that's interoperable with the rest of the Lightning network. You can pay any Lightning invoice. You can pay any Lightning address. You can receive from anyone on Lightning on the greater Lightning network, whatever wallet they use. But you have perfect privacy, or you have really good privacy guarantees. It depends how many people are in the wallet. But like, if you have like a million people using this one wallet, no one can tell the difference between you and the other million people. So you have very good privacy. You have extremely cheap transactions because it's Lightning based, cheaper than using it another way. And you have no channel management because it's a custodial wallet. So you don't have to deal with any of the pain points of Lightning, making sure you have liquidity, doing all this stuff. So like the holy grail when we're talking about privacy on Bitcoin is right now, privacy on Bitcoin is more difficult than not being private on Bitcoin. It's more expensive than not being private on Bitcoin. If we can turn those two so it's easier and cheaper, then people will actually use it. Otherwise, I'm just screaming into the wind, and like a few hardcores will understand that they should probably do it, but like they're not going to do it because it's more difficult and more expensive. Oh, and one more thing. So like I launched a venture fund, the largest Bitcoin only venture fund in the space in October. And I got a lot of shit for that, which is fair. I appreciate getting shit. In my announcement post of it, I was like, I expect everyone to give me fucking shit for it. I've always given VC shit, the scum of the fucking earth. But we're trying to do it differently. And two ways we're trying to do it differently is, first of all, Bitcoin-only companies with a low time preference. So like we're not looking for exits. We're not trying to force them to, you know, sell to another investor so we get our money back. But the second thing is we're providing grants from our management fees. And why are we doing that? So I launched OpenSats, which is a 501c3 that donates to devs. But the problem with a 501c3 tax-deductible organization is you have to dox anyone you give money to. I'm sure Open Source Memes has the same issue. So you have to dox anyone you give money to because you need to fill out the tax forms, because the IRS is like, if it's tax-deductible, I want to make sure you're not paying yourself the money and being like, I'm donating to devs, but you're really just buying yourself whiskey. So that's not great for privacy devs, right? Like, we don't want all the privacy devs to like dangle some money in front of them and then they have to dox themselves to you and dox themselves to the IRS. With 1031, we don't have that issue because it's not tax deductible. So we can just give people Bitcoin if we want to give them Bitcoin. And so we gave Obi and Eric $50,000 to make this Fediment thing a reality. And that was like a week ago. So I'm pretty excited about that.
Wow. Awesome, dude. That's super bullish. Jim, Tucson, you guys came up. You guys got some comments or questions?
I was just curious what Matt thought of Bitcoin's overall, let's say, likelihood of success. And when I say success, I mean the one world money. Well, the main, you know, like the U.S. dollar is now like the world reserve currency being Bitcoin. You know, there was a lot of chance that could never happen. I'm just wondering Matt's feeling, oh, we passed 50% chance it could happen. You know, like what's the overall likelihood with the way the network's grown over the last 13, 14 years? What do you think?
All caps, hand to God, 100%.
Nice. I love that.
The realistic answer is it's higher than it's ever been before. We got to stay humble out here. I honestly think, you know, it's going to happen. I have a lot of conviction on it. I mean, I'm fucking, not only am I all in financially, like I left my fiat job. I'm working like 5 different Bitcoin jobs. All my family and friends know me as a Bitcoin person. Like, I'm going to have to just like hide in a cabin in the woods and like never talk to anybody again if we're wrong about this fucking thing. So I think my conviction, you know, and all of us, I mean, I think a lot of us are like that. And I think at the end of the day, this is, you know, open source code is powerful, but it relies on people to actually use that code. It's a movement of individuals. I don't think we can be stopped, but if we are stopped, we're completely fucked anyway. So there's really nowhere to go except forward and try and make this thing work. I will say my bigger concern is not Bitcoin becoming the global reserve currency. I'm pretty sure that's going to happen, and I'm pretty sure Bitcoin is going to continue to increase in price long term with adoption. Like, just makes sense to me. Most people don't have it yet, and as more people get it, it's got to go up in price. I've said many times it's designed to pump forever long term. My bigger concern is that it's super successful on that front, but it's very easy to use for surveillance, and that's why a lot of my focus is on privacy, because it's not just enough that Bitcoin is successful. We have to make sure that it doesn't turn into cuck money on the way.
I like how Matt said he's gonna hide in a cabin in the woods if it goes to zero, but if it also moons the way we want it to be,
I'm gonna go hide in the cabin in the
woods. Yeah, we're gonna hide in the cabin in the woods as well.
But and if we crap, either direction, I'm gonna be in a cabin in the woods. But it just matters how much land I have. Is really what the result is. It's if we're correct, I'm gonna have a lot of land in the woods, and if I'm wrong, I'm gonna have a tiny little plot on someone else's land.
Let's go, Tucson. Question, comment.
I just gotta say, you totally misread my question earlier, but I won't go into that. Yeah, Matt, it's cool hanging out with you last week in Nashville. Great meeting you in person again. Kind of curious what your thoughts are as far as mining pools and, you know, potential attack vectors and in that direction as far as mining pools attempting to KYC users, stuff like that, and, you know, what you think solutions to issues like that are.
You know, I'm pretty concerned about it. I'm concerned both on the mining pool side. And also, I'm concerned about these large public miners that have these massive warehouse mines. I mean, most of them are using Foundry right now. Foundry is the largest mining pool in the world. And they grew to the largest mining. They grew from like nothing to the largest mining pool in the world in a year and a half, 2 years off the back of these public miners. You can't even sign up for Foundry on the website. Like you, like not only is there KYC, like you have to like meet a person. You know, you have to like put on a suit and like go talk to them and like get them to agree to let you use their pool. So the reality is already here. The largest mining pool in the world is KYC users. Now, when we see the spread of KYC, usually when that happens is the argument is that someone's a custodian. And if you're a custodian, regulators, specifically US regulators, force you to do KYC. Now, all the mining pools that are currently set up, they're all custodians for a little bit. Like you collect your rewards in the mining pool, and then they pay you out usually at some kind of threshold or timing thing. They'll pay you out, but they're your custodians in the meantime. So there's definitely a very real risk that they could get KYC'd. I know Slush Pool said that if they ever were forced to do it, they would just shut down and release all their secret sauce so some other person could launch a mining pool. One nice thing about a mining pool instead of like exchanges and stuff is they don't really need bank accounts. So they can operate from anywhere in the world with really no traditional financial connection. So hopefully like this jurisdictional arbitrage thing protects us. I don't know if there's an easy technical solution. You know, one thing that people talk about a lot is Laurentia Pool, this tiny pool that Mind Farm Buy runs. I love Mind Farm Buy, he's a great dude. They pay out all of your rewards on a per block basis, so they never take custody. There's something, I mean, I know Tucson knows, but for the rest of the audience, there's something called a Coinbase transaction, which is completely unrelated to the exchange Coinbase. They just chose to use a fucking Bitcoin term as their name. And the Coinbase transaction is where the miner pays themselves. But usually the mining pool just pays themselves everything, and then they separate it out afterwards. With Laurentia Pool, they just pay everyone out on the Coinbase transaction so that they don't take custody. The problem there is, you know, you don't pay fees on the Coinbase transaction because you're the miner of the transaction. But then the miners are all, you know, stuck with, especially if you're a small time miner, you know, you got three S19s or even worse, like you have like two S9s or something. Like you're just getting paid dust every transaction. You're getting paid dust that if the fees go up even a negligible amount, they become completely uneconomical to spend. So I don't really think that's a solution. So we'll see how it plays out. Hopefully the jurisdictional thing works. You know, with a system like Bitcoin, it's really cool because it is truly anti-fragile. But as a result, like it doesn't really improve until it needs to improve. Like there will be pain. There'll be many moments of pain in different aspects of Bitcoin. I said many times that I don't think Lightning has hit its adversarial moment yet, where like a real attacker has hit Lightning. I would say the same thing with mining pools. And if a real attacker starts hitting mining pools, then Bitcoiners will be incentivized around the world to figure out something to stop that attack. But unfortunately, we'll probably have to hit the pain point before that is really realized.
Man, all the signal there. T-Bone, comment or question?
Yeah, Matt, how you going, man? I'm wondering when you're coming down to El Salvador to hang out with us. We've got a lot of crazy shit going on here. And you talk about cabin in the woods. You know, we got plenty of land here, cheap as hell, and you can build yourself a cabin in the woods. It's a beautiful place to live.
I am definitely going to come visit soon. I've been doing a lot of traveling. I mean, this week I'm going to Oslo for the Freedom Forum. But I've told a bunch of the boys in El Salvador that I have to come visit. I might have if we ever hit 200K, you know, by like four conference days from now, I might have a vacation house down there. But I cannot move to El Salvador until they improve their gun laws. Like that's just not leaving my guns.
We'll reserve you a spot on Rancho Satoshi, which we're building at the moment.
Fuck yes. I love it. I look forward to visiting, though, dude. I'll All jokes aside, well, that's not a, the gun thing is not a joke. That's completely.
Can you tell us about the gun thing? But can you do it in an Australian accent?
No, I don't. I don't do accents. only Marty attempts to do accents, and he butchers them every time. If I try and do an accent, it'll probably just come out Jamaican, and I don't want it on the record.
Thanks, Matt.
Cheers,
gentlemen. Good evening.
Go on.
Good evening.
Thank you. Odell, I had a question for you or for any one of you that is heavily involved in mining. When you guys see that we get to a point where all home appliances mine while they operate, how far do you guys think we are from that time?
Not all home appliances, but I think we're like 5 to 8 years for most, you know, new water heaters in houses to have ASICs built into them. I think that's like a perfect fit. Everyone has a water heater already. They're buying this piece of equipment. It's a specialized piece of equipment that they're putting in their basement. Why doesn't it have an immersion miner in it? Like, that makes complete sense to me. So I think that kind of, those kind of things come first. I don't know why you'd ever need a fucking miner in your toaster or some shit. But like the big things that you buy that are like are supposed to last like 8 to 10 years, that are already generating heat, like a water heater or like a heater, right? Like a heating unit. I mean, we see already today, like people, if they have the forced air heat, they just hook up miners in the basement, put a filter on it, and then push that through their air ducts. I think like we'll hit the point where you just like go to Home Depot. And like you can either buy the shitty water heater that doesn't have a Bitcoin miner in it, or you buy the one that has a Bitcoin miner in it, and then you replace it after 10 years. And the biggest issue for that right now is the miner life cycle. So like no one wants to buy historically these ASICs, they become obsolete after a couple of years, they become unprofitable after a couple of years. No one wants to buy a new water heater every 3 years. It's more like a 10-year purchase if you know, in most situations. And right now, when you look at the S9s, I mean, the S9s have been mining profitably for maybe 6 years now, 7 years now. So we're getting close to that point. I think we're getting close to that point where we can have ASICs that will have a reasonable lifetime. And the beauty of using it in a waste heat type of scenario is they could actually be technically unprofitable. But because you're using that heat to heat your water or to heat your home, that's an expense that you're already are going to be paying. So you're able to dip a little bit below zero there. And then you doubly get the benefit of you're just no KYC stacking. So like to this day, like people do not understand the significance of Mahler's announcement at Bitcoin 2022. And the key there for me as a home miner is we're able to mine. So we have our on-ramp. No KYC stacking. You have your no KYC stacking on ramp. If Mahler follows through with his plan to have like 50% of retail stores in America accept Bitcoin via Lightning, where they can't see your UTXO history because you're paying over Lightning and senders on Lightning have pretty good privacy, then you have your no KYC off ramp. So all these exchanges, everything can do whatever the fuck they want to do. But if you have a miner in your water heater, you're constantly stacking every second of every day. If you're already eating at Whole Foods, going to any of these stores, whatnot, then you have a way to spend your Bitcoin. You can completely separate yourself from the system. And this is not happening in a foreign country. This is happening in one of the richest countries in the world, the 350 million people in it.
Bro, and not only just that, but like imagine like this, like if every residential facility, like everybody's home has like a Bitcoin submersion miner. That's providing like a heat exchange to the cold water.
That's what I'm talking about.
Hot water heater. You could be like heating your hot water with propane or wood or like whatever, you know, solar electricity. But you're like using the Bitcoin waste heat. You've monetized that waste heat to preheat, you know, the forced hot water baseboard heat or like your shower or your hot water in your sinks using this waste heat. And like you've basically created a derivative, like your home HVAC system is giving you Satoshis as a derivative. right? And it's like, yeah, fucking 10 years down the road, and plus the appreciation of everything. And not only that, but you've got the actual decentralization of the network too.
That's what I. The that's
decentralization
what
of the network is through. Now in like every fucking person's home, right?
Yeah, so
like all across the country, all across the world, people are doing this, and like everyone's got a miner at their house. I'm so bullish on this. Fucking love it. Odell, thanks for having me.
So you say what? 10 years? Odell, do you mind putting a? I mean, I don't mean to. To order you anything about it, do you mind sharing through a tweet or something like that, a suggestion or something like that, so we can start studying it and sharing it if it is the case?
It's just an XRP exchanger. It's just, if you want to incorporate an ASIC miner in your home, all it is an extra, like, hot working fluid, like fluid pump, and an extra heat exchanger in the cold intake to your home heating boiler. Right, so it's just like one extra loop that you need to run consistently that's providing like the working fluid.
So if you open your favorite podcast app and you type in Sizzle Dispatch, episode 31 is my first home mining episode, and then we did two more after that, so it's literally like 9 hours of content with awesome crazy people who are obsessed with home mining. And that's where I would say you should start. We tried to make the first one more accessible. I think it's pretty accessible, but we do dive really deep. I mean, it's a 3-hour episode. So definitely check that out.
Cool. Thanks a lot, man.
Beautiful, guys. Well, any more question, guys? Because I will wrap this up. We'll be respectful of Matt's time. And then we'll keep it rolling after the fact. I know how you like the spaces going. So going once, going twice. Any requests? Oh, we got one. Let's see. Okay. Looks human. 1 second, guys.
I'll drop mine so he can use it. Good evening, gentlemen. Take care. Thanks.
Okay. Well, lost the guy.
Well, I got a chance here. Matt, thanks for coming, man. We do this every Wednesday, and we appreciate some fresh faces and some fresh ideas, and you got so much insight into Bitcoin and the whole ecosystem that everybody that gets to come out and listen to us bullshit every night gets a new perspective. Somebody like you comes along, and we really appreciate it.
I appreciate you, Jim. You know, it's always a pleasure kicking it with you guys.
100%. Kay, you are up here. Question or comment?
Yeah, I wanted to ask Matt one more question about privacy. A lot of people, you know, a lot of talk about your phone and everything. A lot of people overlook their cars, their vehicles they drive every day. Most new cars are equipped with, you know, cameras, 360 cameras, all the newer cars. They're equipped with GPS OnStar. So I want to ask Matt, what's your ideal dumb car?
Dude, it's so fucking bad. I'm hoping that like an NVK comes around, like just a rich Bitcoiner who wants a better car and just releases like the cold card of cars. But we're not there yet. So I drive around a 2007 truck. It's got none of those connected shits in it. You know, it's probably got the bare minimum computers in it. And which is crazy. Like now 2007, that's a 15-year-old truck. I'm just going to run that thing into the ground and hope. And it's double good because it helps me with privacy, but also it helps me stack more. You're short Bitcoin if your car is younger than Bitcoin is the way to look at it, in my opinion. But I run one of those Garmin, you know, nav systems. So like if you can buy a Garmin GPS for like $300, it's standalone. It doesn't connect to the internet. Like the way GPS works is it's basically a passive signal. So it's not sending anything to the satellite. It's just picking up the signal from the satellite. So it gives you full GPS without actually connecting back to any kind of internet. And what's really cool is there's an FM receiver in it that also works passively that gives you traffic. In a privacy preserving way. So you're not reporting your location back to the traffic thing. It's just like, they're just broadcasting traffic ones and zeros on an FM signal. And your GPS knows where it is. So it's just basing whatever they say on where it is, and it kind of can guess what the traffic is. Now, it's not going to be as good as Google Maps. When it comes to privacy, everything's a convenience versus privacy trade-off. So it's going to be a little bit less convenient. But it gets the job done, and it's privacy preserving at the same time. But I will tell you, what I would do to have a brand new car that just had none of this bullshit in it. You know, like people like to point out Teslas or whatever. Teslas are obviously a fucking nightmare. Like, that's completely connected. They can like brick your car very easily. They probably have, like, God mode over in like Elon's bathroom. He like probably just sits on the toilet and just watches where everyone goes and what they're listening to. But all the cars are like that nowadays. If you go into any new car, there's a million different things that are spying on you and that can control your vehicle.
Yeah, a lot of it's just the government regulations and stuff. So on a long enough time frame, Bitcoin fixes this.
Yeah, but the simple answer is used old cars is the way to go. Used old cars.
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
Bro, I ran a 1984 diesel Mercedes 300 turbo diesel on recycled vegetable oil for 14 years. I traveled across the country in the United States of America, 2,750 miles on 3.74 gallons of diesel, and the rest of it was recycled vegetable oil from fryers. Everyone shits on seed oil, but I'll tell you what, it gets me down the fucking road, 24 miles per gallon, and it was all grown on the continent of the...
I fucking love that. Also, I want to say that I think it's kind of great that we've become a seed oil community as well.
Well, I'll burn that shit for fucking miles down the road. Thank you very much.
I feel like it's the hidden handshake of Bitcoiners. Like, if you meet someone in the bar and you think they might be a Bitcoiner, you ask them what they're paying on seed oils.
I hate seed oil. Fuck seed oil.
Go, motherfucking butt!
All right, guys. Well, that was amazing. Wine, do we have any comments to share?
I mean, we've been asking lately what your favorite meme is, so we never really got Matt's answer.
Oh, the best meme I've ever, I think my favorite meme on Bitcoin Twitter was Yellow posted this video meme of Michael Saylor saying there's no second best. It's from that movie, is it Scream, where like he's like chopping down the door and like the woman's on the other side of the door and he's like peeking through the door and he's saying, there's no second best. There is no second best. I literally was just laughing.
There is no second best.
What is it, The Shining?
Check the nest.
All right, guys. Beautiful. Wine. Any comments left in the ZBD QR code?
I think the QR code might have been broken today because we only got we got three tips today, so this show is on its last breaths. Yes, we are still relying on advertisers, but there has been some good days. Today we only got three tips, so we'll read them out loud. You ready, Optimus?
Let's go. I'm ready.
The first one was for 500 sats by Labrahoddle for Horcris and Winekiss's electricity bill. And yes, my electricity is back. Next tip was such humble, much stack. And the last one is 28K gang is back. Let's fucking go, cheap sats.
That's cool, motherfucking bug!
It's going up forever, Laura.
And those are guys. The shitposting as a service tips brought to you by Labrahoddle.
As always, before we go...
You're against Bitcoin. You're against freedom.
So, love you guys. This has been Optimus Fields at My Living Truth. My co-host, Winekiss. This has been Bitcoin Kindergarten. And we had Matt Odell here with you guys, bro. Like, come on, son. Let's go. So, without further ado, to you guys in the YouTube chat, we love you. Continue to troll us. To everyone in the spaces, come back next week, every Wednesday, 9 p.m. Eastern time. Yeah.